Vic Schinkel, the director of the West Lafayette Public Library, reviews the book by celebrated historian and travel writer Tony Perrette, The Sinner's Grand Tour, a journey through the historical underbelly of Europe, whisks us across the continent to discover a string of legendary sites and relics that are still kept far from public view. Schinkel begins his review by reading from the book.
It was a classic summer's day in London. The city was enveloped by veils of dismal rain. And as I skulked through the lonely back streets of Bloomsbury, I began to feel like Dr. Jekyll before a binge. Decent folk who passed me by seemed to hasten their step, ducking beneath their umbrellas when they glimpsed my wild eyes. It was as if they could sense my furtive mission. I was on my way to the British Museum, where I planned to locate the dreaded Secretorium, the world's most extensive cache of historical erotica, and then wallow in its shameful contents. Yes, The Sinner's Grand Tour is a different kind of travel memoir, written with more than a little tongue-in-cheek attitude, which gives the book a zest that makes it almost unputdownable. All those delicious European hints of debauchery are to be found in these pages. The medieval Beatrice, the Isle of Capri, Lord Byron, Casanova, chastity belts, and the Inquisition, to mention just a few. We open our narrative, as we have just heard, with a stop at the British Museum in London, home of the Secretum, a real tourist destination in a subterranean kind of way, during Victorian English times especially. Let's continue with that opening story. In the high Victorian age, with Oscar Wilde in the defendant box, fig leaves on every statue and moral watchdogs on every corner, many a guilty-looking gentleman would have trodden this same path to London's most hallowed institution. But instead of admiring the respectable exhibits, these discerning types would have slipped through the crowds to meet a museum official, the keeper of the Secretum. Letters of introduction were presented, written by trustees or college dons. And then the visitor, who might have been accompanied on rare occasions by a female companion or two, would be ushered down a dark stairway to the north basement to wait for a door to be unlocked. The Secretum was created in 1866 at the height of the era's sexual hysteria to protect the public from the moral perils of history. The year before, 434 ancient phallic objects had been donated by a free-thinking doctor named George Witt, who had made his fortune in Australia from banking. Dr. Witt was convinced that all world religions had begun with phallus worship and had gathered around him a clique of wealthy phallus collectors who supported his thesis. While accepting the bequest, the British Museum trustees voted to allocate a special room where the Witt collection could be examined in suitable privacy. The room was quickly supplemented with obscene treasures from all historical periods. British archaeologists and academics had long been returning from their journeys around the world with shocking depictions of guilt-free sex. By the 1890s, the Museum Secretum, Secret Museum, boasted over 1,100 wicked objects. So besides the allure of the forbidden, what does this book tell us? Well, to be human is to collect, it seems. And to be human is to be fascinated by anything sexual, especially when those sexual whatchamacallits can reference a junior high school sensibility, as our author tells us early in his narrative. In a way, this trip to the British Museum was something I'd been plotting since I was a teenager. I attended one of the last hardline Irish Catholic high schools in Sydney, where the records of history were hardly less sanitized than they were for Victorians. In this orthodox worldview, the ancient Greeks were lofty philosophers. Renaissance popes were cultured patrons of the arts. Georgian aristocrats were demure scientists and scholars. And all those Edwardian writers who moved to Capri were just interested in the scenery. Even as an adolescent, I suspected there was more to it than that. And in recent years, the academic world has been deluged with research that focuses on the human, daily details of history, overturning the sterile view of the past. Whole volumes are now penned on the gay clubs of Belle Époque Paris or Weimar Berlin. The Marquis de Sade is more famous than any Catholic saint, and a lesbian nun in Renaissance Venice has as many biographies as Britney Spears. Yes, the Sinner's Grand Tour takes a wide swath of sexual lore into its maw, lore that our author at least asserts can be the stuff of even a family-friendly trip. My wife was very understanding when I first broached the idea of this trip back home in Manhattan. So it's a young man's erotic journey from Milan to Minsk? What? It sounds great, but I'm coming too, and so are the kids. I'd clutched my map of Europe with my route carefully zigzagged in red marker and began to stammer out the many logical objections to the idea. Dragging both the boys around Europe would be excruciating. We'd be better off going up the Empire State Building and tearing up $100 bills. Well, we can't stay here, my wife said. She did have a point. We were staring down the barrel of another brutal New York summer. The city would soon be stewing in its own fetid juices, and the boys would be ricocheting around the walls like ping pong balls. I pulled out my trump card. You know, the material I'm researching is not exactly kid-friendly. But even as I said the words, I knew it was a lost cause. In today's uncensored era, Henry, at age 10, had probably seen more sexual imagery than I had by age 35. And that's just from watching The Simpsons. He shrugged it all off with one furrowed eyebrow. And growing up in the East Village isn't the most protected environment on Earth. Sam, meanwhile, was only 4 years old, so would be less interested in Randy Roman satyrs than the flavors of Italian gelato. Before I knew it, our family vacation was settled. I tried to be philosophical. If nothing else, the next generation would have a broader view of the past than I did. But now, in London, as I surveyed the wreckage of our first hotel room, the wisdom of the plan was difficult to recall. We were supposed to be traveling for 3 months to the most sophisticated corners of Europe on singular missions that were as delicate as an 18th-century timepiece. How precisely was I going to stay sane? At least I could take refuge in my feverish visions of history. To paraphrase Virginia Woolf, every gentleman needs a secretum of his own. And so we are off as we tour with the book has subtitled The Underbelly of Europe. With our author, Tony Perrette, and his family, we delve into contemporary historical writing as well as contemporary travel writing to enliven and enrich the narrative. We formally open chapter one with a visit to the venerable Hellfire Club outside of London, where 18th century debauchery was so compelling our author insists it echoes forward to us still in pop culture today. As he writes, modern scholars discount the more rabid rumors of the Hellfire Club, but legends about the Brotherhood have been embellished through the generations, inspiring a string of Victorian pornographic novels, pop culture films such as the 1961 Peter Cushing movie, The Hellfire Club, and cult episodes of The Avengers. A version of the Sinister Club even turns up in Stanley Kubrick's Eyes Wide Shut when Tom Cruise stumbles into a remote rural manor filled with masked aristocrats indulging in unspeakable acts. And a European tour this is. With our author, we cross the channel, family in tow, we presume, and we're taken to 18th century France to visit the haunts of the famed Marquis de Sade. And once again, our author vaults us from the past into the present with musings about famed fashion designer Pierre Cardin's interesting connection with an old French town that the Marquis de Sade called home. Just as intriguing is our visit to a lesser-known region and time of French history as we go back to 14th century France, visiting a small town called Montaillu, where historian Leroy Ladurie dove deep into the rural medieval church bureaucratic records, bringing to us a way of life drenched in folk wisdom, Christian mythology, and what we see today is a pretty raunchy acceptance of the sexual nature of everyday life, a worldview so foreign that it titillates us in our 21st century world. I'd like to think that the farmers of 14th century Languedoc discussed here would have found our reaction to their views of sexuality as weird as we find theirs. And let me point out that we do travel in this Sinner's Grand Tour well beyond the comforting confines of Western Europe, roving with our author as he visits Geneva, Switzerland, in a chapter he has entitled Those Wild and Crazy Swiss. We take to the canals of Venice with the covert Casanova tour. And we sneak a peek into the Vatican's troves of sexual this and that in the heart of Italy. What awaits us in German and Slavic lands? Well, we'll have to wait to find out because we don't go there in today's title. Reading the Sinner's Grand Tour, I wondered more than once, do we still live in the shadow of Victorian European morals? As I read deeply into today's book, I found myself saying, yes, those Victorian mores and Victorian morals inform our lives still today, more than 100 years after Queen Victoria passed on. Why else would the book's focus on the naughty aspects of human collecting and museum going offer on nearly every page a palpable sense of, really oughtn't to go there, but what the heck? Our author and his editors know his readers, and I'll posit that we readers still travel with a Victorian purience in at least a few corners of our minds. See what you think after you read a few pages of this book. That said, there is a surprising lack of photos in the Sinner's Grand Tour, and those we do have are in black and white. No, it's the text that makes this book the winner that it is. All of that said, the Sinner's Grand Tour is not for every reader. But for those who are intrigued by the often unspoken world of sex and sexuality throughout history, the Sinner's Grand Tour is a treat to share. Let's finish up by reading from our author's own final musings as he and his family visit that famed Isle of Capri, home, as we learn, of debauched Roman emperors from centuries ago, and resilient still today with our author's own memories of Brigitte Bardot. On our last weekend in Europe, I realized I had no longer any relics to chase or mad rituals to attend. Instead, I found myself chatting to locals on the beach. I discovered it was possible to rent antique wooden motorboats by the day. Les packed an Italian feast, and we spent the day exploring the island's crevices, diving off the side of the boat and swimming around the base of the island. By afternoon, we were just purring around Capri's soaring coastline in a dreamy silence. But even then, I'm ashamed to confess, I had an ulterior motive. I was quietly motoring us toward my personal favorite erotic landmark on Capri, the Villa Malaporte, a site that will forever be associated with the image of the 22-year-old Brigitte Bardot sunbathing on its upper deck. This modernist fortress, built on a rocky headland in 1937, resembles a Mayan temple more than a private residence. It made a stunning backdrop for the Jean-Luc Godard's 1968 film Contempt, which has lodged in my imagination since I was a feverish adolescent. Today, the Casa Malaporta is hidden from prying eyes, that is, to all but ships at sea. I could picture it all now. While Les and the kids drowsed contentedly on the deck, I happily imagined Brigitte Bardot rising from her towel on the rooftop, fluttering down the steps, and diving, Venus-like, into the turquoise sea. And then I turned the rudder around for home. The Sinner's Grand Tour, a journey through the historical underbelly of Europe. A book that's perhaps not for everyone, but certainly a fascinating read if you're intrigued by the sexual lore of Western history. It's a great book if you enjoy that sort of thing, and it's available at many of our fine local public libraries, including the West Lafayette Public Library.
That was Nick Schinkel, the director of the West Lafayette Public Library. He's reviewed the newest book by celebrated historian and travel writer Tony Perrottet.